So we actually have a listener submitted question here right now, which is wonderful. I want to let folks know they can call in and join the conversation, as well as become a member of KBUT today by calling 970-349-7444. This is submitted from a listener who says he or she has owned property east of Gunnison for 30 years, spent thousands of dollars to prevent the spread of beetles. What do the panelists think about public involvement and mitigation on private land? You touched on some of that a little bit, Sam, but it's a small percentage, but part of the problem. So perhaps if Amy, you had a response to that, we could hear from you on that. Sam sort of alluded to, you know, talking about what private landowners can do. But Amy, do you have anything to add to that?
I mean, I don't really have much to add. If you have the means and you want to help prevent bark beetles, then I think it's fantastic. Unfortunately, if you have a neighbor right next to you that's not doing anything, I mean, you know, you're going to protect your trees. But, you know, maybe your neighbor isn't and just exacerbating the problem. But, you know, not everybody can afford to, you know, harvest their trees or put, you know, verbenone or MCH, which are anti-aggregate pheromones that basically tell the beetles, like, keep moving, this tree is full, it's a synthetic pheromone. But anyway, there are options for homeowners, but not everybody, you know, has the means to be able to treat their property. But if you do, then it's excellent, and we totally support that.
You know, Amy, as you were talking about treatments and harvesting of trees, it did sound a little bit like it's fighting a losing battle. Do you feel that way? And I'd like both of you to speak to, you know, what you talked about, the natural cycle and watching a landscape change, because that does happen. I know we love our trees and we want things to stay the same in Gunnison County, but it is part of a natural cycle. And I'd like to both of you to really elaborate on that and how we deal with it, you know, in our own heads.
Amy, do you want to take that one first?
Sure. Yeah. So I don't think that we're fighting a losing battle with all outbreaks. The spruce beetle one really just was overdue. And I mean, it was coming no matter what we were going to do about it. You know, we have been harvesting, you know, like we've been getting kind of in front of this in some areas of Colorado where, you know, the trees were thinned, you know, like we left young ones and then, you know, the spruce beetle came through. And again, like millions and millions of numbers, and, you know, they wiped out forests that we thought were going to be more resilient. You know, like with the mountain pine beetle that we just have barely starting as an outbreak right now, we can get ahead of that. And that's what we're trying to do. You know, it's less than 600 acres. We're, you know, we identified it quickly. You know, we jumped on the chance to find most of the trees that are infested with beetles, and we've been taking them out. Are we going to do this in a year? No, but we're going to keep doing it every year, and we're going to continue to monitor, and we're going to, like, literally, like, just try to get out in front of this and, you know, kind of curb the outbreak. If we're looking out into the next 100 years, yeah, we're probably just delaying the inevitable, but we're definitely buying ourselves some time. And, you know, it gives us a lot, you know, more time to actually, you know, get more treatments on the ground. And again, just try to get out in front of these outbreaks. Sam, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, I would almost, Chris, kind of your question there in terms of the natural cycle. Like, I think there's a lot of people that would argue that this isn't 100% natural in terms of the numbers that we're seeing out there. And this is a whole big deep dive that we could do here, but, you know, I think it's important for people to consider, like, when we look back at the last century of, this goes way back to the founding of the U.S. Forest Service, but we've been putting out fires for a really long time. And, you know, a lot of folks will contribute the landscape, I guess the scale and of these bark beetle outbreaks and issues to potentially to fire suppression. And I should be really careful with that, because, you know, there are areas like in the spruce fir, that really high elevation ecosystem, where, you know, under natural historic conditions, they would only burn 300 to 400 every 300 to 400 years, right? And so maybe the spruce beetle thing is, you know, kind of in its own world over there. But I guess when you look at nearly every stand of trees I've walked out in the Gunnison Basin has some evidence of historic wildfire in them. And so I think it is important to look at, like, you know, what have we learned from the past? I think one of the things I'd like our community to think about in terms of how we sort of embrace this, as you're saying, Chris, or how we deal with the issue going forward, or how do I view it, is I think getting folks used to having smoke in the air is going to be a big hurdle for us. Nobody likes it. We don't like to breathe in smoke. It's at the peak of our tourist season, typically, when wildfires burn. And again, I'm going off a little tangent here, so I apologize, but that is the natural disturbance regime out there. And I think that's going to be one of our biggest challenges as a community, is getting used to more smoke in the air as kind of the natural disturbance that we've really been suppressing for largely over a century now. And then just, you know, I guess my thoughts on, you know, it's hard. I'm so accustomed to seeing, large-scale mortality of our beautiful tree species here in the Gunnison Basin. But one thing I will say is that nature is extremely resilient. It may never look exactly the same as it looked when we moved here or when we were born in the Gunnison Basin, but it's constantly changing and evolving. And so our, you know, really ultimately our goal is to help us through these transitional phases, through tools like forest management, through, you know, protecting our watersheds, protecting critical infrastructure and life safety. And so that's really kind of our focus in terms of, I guess, Chris, you're going back to, like, you know, can we do anything about this? And I think, you know, protecting those values at risk right now is really what we can and what we are focused on doing.
So we have just a few minutes left here. We're not sure if our final guest is actually going to be making it on here with us. A listener called in and did ask a question about firewood, and I think Chris Rourke had something she wanted to ask about firewood as well.
All right, Sam and Amy, if we have all these trees dying, right, and we need to get them out of the forest, why is firewood so expensive in the Gunnison area, in the Gunnison Valley?
Do you want me to take that one, Amy?
Sure.
Either one of you.
Go for it.
Yeah. So I don't know if I can specifically say why firewood is so expensive. I guess maybe I'll use this as an opportunity for caution. So one of the reasons why our U.S. Forest Service partners, when they do permits, they require the trees to be either standing or down and dead, is because when the tree is fully dead, there's no longer a concern for transporting those bark beetles around from different, parts of the basin.
Yeah.
So we really encourage folks, if you are going to be cutting firewood and moving firewood around, that you make sure there's no bark beetles in there. And ideally it's already dead trees. But it does bring up a larger issue is, in terms of kind of the socioeconomic impacts of all this, there's a lot of material coming out of the forest that is potentially usable. And so certainly we like to see that carbon stored or captured somehow if possible. And so, again, there's probably a whole nother big discussion that we could go down in terms of forest products and usage in the Gunnison Basin.
Well, and this format will always be here to have that conversation. Unfortunately, we're going to have to cut off the conversation here shortly. And then we are going to get to our final guest this evening. Dr. Heidi Stelzer is ready to talk to us. I just want to say, before we take a brief break, thanks so much to Sam Pankratz and Amy Lochner for joining us tonight. And happy birthday, Amy.
Aww.
Thank you.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
So much for spending it with us. This is Community Matters here on KBUT.